What's good? What's good? What's good, fans? It's week 105, Voice of the Fans podcast. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I am your man, Cam, and I got my man, Young Sam, with me. How you doing, Young Sam?
Doing fantastic, Cam. Thanks for asking.
We make up Voice of the Fans podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about week two in the NFL. We got NBA playoff action. We're going to talk about this day in history or this week in history. And some fantasy football topics, man. See how your teams are doing. Talk about our team. I can't give any more tips away because Young Sam over there listening. So we're just going to talk about how his team is performing. Get comfortable, guys. Let's do it. As always, want to shout out to your listeners, however you're listening to us. Apple Podcasts, Tuned In, Spotify, Google Podcasts, however you guys choose to listen to us. Stitcher, CastBox. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Also, make it a point to rate and review our show. It helps us out on the algorithms. So thank you guys again for tuning in. It is September 23rd, 2020. And as I mentioned, this is week 105 of the Voice of the Fans podcast. We use these numbers, Cleavon. We talk about every week who wore the number the best or who first come to your mind when you think of the number 23. And MJ the GOAT. I mean, I don't think there's any question there unless you want to go back to high school and think about Jamal Crawford from the town. But who comes to your mind first, sir?
Well, I think the person that comes to mind first for me, Cam, is a guy named LeBron James, someone looking to get to his 10th NBA Finals. The person that wore it best at this point is, I would have to agree with you, Michael Jordan. I mean, a lot of people say he is the GOAT, and you know, who am I to disagree with that?
Yeah, I'm glad you finally come to your senses with this one. And your potato chip, Mr. AD, looks like he's well and healthy right there, just catching lobs again from Rajon Rondo. But with under 6 minutes to go, your guy, who you say come to your mind first, just misses a free throw. That's kind of odd. With the number five, with it being 105, we have Joe DiMaggio, Don Staley, or Mario Bailey. Those are some of the names that come to my mind first when I think of the number five. Who comes to your mind, sir?
You know, honestly, the person that comes to mind first is Reggie Bush and all of the great things he was able to do down there at Southern Cal, Heisman Trophy, et cetera, perfect season. But I believe Joe DiMaggio probably wore it best, Cam.
Okay. All right. I agree with that. Dawn Staley, there's been some conversation of her actually getting some conversation about her working out with the Philadelphia 76ers as a head coach. What's your thoughts on that, man? And how would that be a step for women in basketball?
Be a huge step for women in basketball. I think that there's a lot of other assistant coaches that probably will – feel like she's somewhat usurped the line, very similar to Steve Nash in Brooklyn. There's only a handful of opportunities within the league, so how they're doled out is extremely speculative. But I mean, I think it would be a huge thing for women empowerment, and I can't say for sure if she's ready to go to the Philadelphia 76ers. I feel like I would be going a little bit out on a limb to say that she's more than capable, even within the ranks. Becky Hammons, and people of that nature have definitely, paid their dues and, got their chops and have not been offered that type of opportunity. So I know she is a Philadelphia native. So maybe it works out from a PR standpoint, but whether she can, right the ship over there is a question to be had. I don't necessarily know that I feel that she's the answer over there.
Well, number one, they got to get one of their better players to be able to shoot jumpers. If she can do that, more power to her. But she is, multiple time gold medal winner, I should say, national champion, also WNBA champion. We don't know how that equates, obviously, as you mentioned, to the NBA action. But being a native, maybe she's had some time there. But I don't know. Give her a shot. You can't go any worse. I guess you could get worse by hiring you or I. But I don't know. I say give her a shot. Maybe there's some good things because she does know basketball. So at the end of the day, basketball is basketball. But as you mentioned, there's probably some coaches, Becky Hammond in particular, who've been on the sideline waiting for their shot. So I don't know. It'd be interesting. I just heard about that, and I thought that would be a good look. Kind of speaking of, women's rights and equality, et cetera, the whole NBA, their time in the bubble, they've been focusing on this Breonna Taylor situation. And I'm not going to make this a political show, but I do just want to get your feedback on the ruling that came down in Kentucky about the Breonna Taylor incident, where none of the officers will be charged with her death. And in fact, the one officer is being charged for shooting into the wall and endangering the neighbors, not where Breonna Taylor actually was shot and killed. They ignored that, but they pay more attention to the wall being damaged and the neighbors' potential of injury. What's your thoughts on that real quick? And let the people know what your thoughts are.
I think it's very telling that the police department was kind of gearing up for this decision and kind of with regards to their off-duty officers and who was going to be able to get time off and those type of things was already kind of premeditated, which kind of let you know where they thought that decision was going to go. You hate to get to a point where you're not surprised by these decisions anymore, but unfortunately, I think that's, kind of where Black America is at. I guess it's just America in general, I should say. And that it's unfortunate that we continue to get fresh content and a fresh narrative that lets us know kind of how much work still needs to be done. I was extremely disappointed in the decision, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, it does speak to kind of the more attention. I appreciate the guys in the bubble and the NBA players and, NFL players and baseball players all kind of speaking their mind and letting people know that Black Lives Matter and that there are still some changes that need to be made within the country. I kind of saw the writing on the wall when they came to the settlement a few weeks ago, or was it a few weeks ago or last week, and they offered her family a bunch of money. They kind of figured out once they paid her off that, in a sense, that there wasn't going to be any charges being levied then at that point. So it's unfortunate, as you mentioned, it speaks to there's a lot more work to be done. But within the NFL, man, last week the topic of the NFL is we really quickly saw that injuries played a major factor into kind of what happened. We had Cortland Sutton go down, Saquon Barkley, Nick Bosa, George Kittle, Jimmy G, Raheem Mostert, C.J. McCaffrey, I mean, Anthony Barr. We had a whole host of players that went down in week two. And, sorry if they affected your fantasy team, but what was the most impactful injury that you are familiar with from week two in the NFL?
It's hard to say, Cam. I think just on the surface, you would say the most impactful would be Saquon Barkley, just from the sake that he's out for the season, and he is the catalyst of their offense. Make no mistake about it. Quite a huge percentage of offensive plays in the New York Giants were through him. So I think that's probably been the most impactful. I think also Mr. Bosa over there in San Francisco is going to play a very big part in how they look going forward. Up here in Seattle, we're licking our chops. We lost, two starters in Bruce Irvin and Marquise Blair to torn ACLs. So it was pretty bad all the way around. And, Christian Jackson McCaffrey also with the high ankle sprain 4-6. I mean, that definitely can play a major role, but I think Saquon Barkley's injury was the biggest.
You know, all injuries are difficult, but I don't think that. I think Nick Bosa was the most impactful because he was a bigger factor on a winning team. Where Saquon Barkley, I mean, they were going to struggle to win games anyway, with or without him. Nick Bosa, you know, he was going to be a major factor in that defense and their opportunity to win games. Oh, wow, LeBron just gets away with a terrible foul here late in the game, a four-point game. Oh, and then he gets a layup on the other end. Oh, man, what a turnaround. Raheem Mostert, you know, C.J. McCaffrey, I don't think – I'd say he's probably the best player to get injured. However, I don't think they would equate to a lot of wins this weekend, or they weren't going to equate to a lot of wins either way. So they do travel. They'll be here in L.A. this weekend to face the Chargers, so I won't get the opportunity to actually see what he can do live in person. But I think that injury as with Saquon Barkley, they just weren't going to get a lot of wins either way. Anthony Barr, a defensive player, defensive stalwart on a good team, was going to impact them. Cortland Sutton, Denver's leading receiver, was pretty impactful. One guy I didn't mention was Mack, for the Indianapolis running back, kind of impacts those guys. But so we had a tough week of injuries. Not to mention the punctured lung for Tyrod Taylor right before the game that thrusted the rookie into the game. What's your thoughts on that situation?
You know, that was actually going to be a part of my funnier foul segment, but we can jump into it right now. I think it's an unfortunate incident. I think that it's something that the doctor probably does quite a few times, and so you can't say, you know, it comes from inexperience. He should have been able to administer that shot pretty seamlessly, I would think, and certainly not to egregious as to puncture a lung while doing it. So it's certainly changed the course of history, in my estimation. I know that Anthony Lynn is saying that, you know, Tyrod Taylor gets his job back when he's healthy, but I don't think that's ever going to happen again, unfortunately. And hopefully the Spanoses are upstanding enough people to just pay out his contract because of the negligence that happened. But yeah, it's funny and foul at the same time. You know, I just you would hate to see that kind of thing happen. And when you're talking about someone getting hurt in warm-ups, I mean, that almost never happens unless you have some soft tissue injury that, you know, you just aggravate. But to hear that happen, I think that's kind of the end of Tyrod's time in Los Angeles, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, we'll see how things transpire. As you mentioned, Anthony Lynn's holding on to him pretty soon. And unfortunately, just to speak of injuries, we might just see another injury with the Dolphins' number one cornerback. He goes to the sideline. Looks like he's good now, but I think he's going to be treated with him by the training. But I don't think that was funny or foul, actually. I mean, that was definitely unfortunate. And, you know, when I'm in the press box watching the game, and, you know, as the game gets kicked off and look out there to see who's starting, and we see number 10 run out there, I'm thinking I'm thinking immediately, what kind of trickery do they have going on? What are we going to see? And then I'm questioning, like, okay, well, this is a rookie, so it's not like he's what's the guy they drafted? It's Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia. It's not like he he's going to come like that. He's not Kyler Murray with a bunch of quick feet and running plays that he's going to do. I'm wondering what kind of trickery they have going on, and it wasn't until after the first drive that we realized that Tyrod was hurt and he was going to be out because he had some chest pains, and it wasn't a couple of days till they decided, or they diagnosed exactly what it was. But yeah, that was unfortunate, I think, is what I would call that injury. We'll get back to the Chargers here in a moment, but Russell outlasting Cam in the first game in Seattle this season. What did you think of that? And what did you think of the crowd noise that is piped into some of these games? When you watch it on TV, it looks like there's sound actually there. When we're in a stadium, we hear just kind of a quiet buzz. But what did you think of the crowd noise that was piped in? And what did you think of Russell outperforming Cam on Sunday night?
I thought it was a spectacular game. As I said earlier, a very pyrrhic victory for the Seahawks with all the injuries that occurred. But I was extremely impressed that they were able to hold off the Patriots on a last second defensive stand. Russell looks as good as he's ever looked, and that's saying a lot. So he definitely is the front runner in the MVP. Race so far, two games in, obviously not a huge body of work, but he's looked sensational, looked very impressive. And to that same vein, I thought Cam looked really good. He's running the ball with a reckless abandon, like it's his rookie season, and he's slinging the ball all over the field. So I think that they both looked great, and ultimately the Seahawks just had a little bit more at the end.
Well, their defense stepped up, as you mentioned, and kind of on the run and play, they kind of shut down Cam here at the last minute. But he picked up a lot of yards passing. And, Russell Wilson has looked like he's very comfortable with number 14 out there. And I'm wondering where the plays are for Tyler Lockett. Is there any discussion there? Or?
Oh, no, there's plenty of plays for Tyler Lockett. Make no mistake, he is still – Russell Wilson's go-to guy. I mean, DK Metcalf certainly can stretch the field and is a physical presence, but, they have a special relationship, one or twin powers activate Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, so he's definitely going to be a big part of the offense going forward.
Okay, we'll see how that transpires. Talking about, quarterbacks around the league, who are you most concerned with? Are you most concerned with Carson Wentz or Drew Brees moving into the second week of the year or third week of the year? Who would you say you're most concerned with?
Between those two, I would probably be a little bit more concerned with Carson Wentz, although there is definitely room for concern watching Drew Brees play without Michael Thomas. It was somewhat frightening, to be quite honest with you, the way their passing game changed. It was a lot of checkdowns. That's not really Drew's thing. So you're definitely seeing the beginning of the end. You always wondered when it would be, and that is now. I certainly don't expect him to put up the numbers that he's put up in the past. Let's just hope he has enough in the tank to, kind of push the Saints towards the playoff run. With regards to Carson Wentz, I think he's just, kind of had to endure too many injuries, and he's just not the same player that he was, and not enough weapons around him to really get things done. So I think that definitely we'll look for his regression quite a bit more than we had thought previously.
Let you know your week started off on a bad note because the Miami Dolphins handily beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 31-13, sir. Just remind you there. I'm hoping Denver's able to pull this out. It's a six point deficit with 59 seconds to go. Number 23 at the free throw line. Hopefully he misses this. Let's see what happens. And it goes there. Seven point deficit for the Nuggets. They need a big three-pointer right here to get close. And what do they do? Murray pulls up. Oh, well, he drives the lane up, and he gets fouled, and then, he misses the lane. I agree. Drew Brees is probably the person to be concerned, although I am concerned about Carson Wentz. Drew Brees, I think, has enough between his coaching. There's enough talent out there. But as you mentioned, it was a bad look without Thomas. But I think there's Alvin Kamara that's going to help him look better. he has Sean Payton, who's going to help orchestrate an offense that, you know, whether it's a dink or dunk or continue hitting the junior guys out in the flat, that's going to allow him to move the ball. In Philadelphia, I don't know if the coach, you know, came in there hot and one year wonders, kind of ran off a great season and they reached the playoffs and go to the Super Bowl. And did he peak too soon? Is that was it? I don't know, because they have been looking terrible ever since then, and they're not looking any better now. Carson seems to be doing too much. He's not reading the plays, or they're not running effective plays to get the ball to their big playmakers. Philadelphia just looks a mess, and it's hard to say that team coming off a Super Bowl championship just a few years ago it looks as bad, but they do. They look like an absolute mess, and I think Carson Wentz. We should be concerned about what Carson Wentz is doing in the NBA in the NFL, because he doesn't seem to have any rhythm. I always go back to the chemistry. Do players like you? Do your teammates like you? Do they work hard for you? We know in the past there were some challenges there. Have they got over that? What's the situation there? Who knows? But Carson Wentz doesn't look so bad, so I'd be more concerned about Carson Wentz and whether the end of Drew Brees is around the corner. I think he has some help to get to look better before the season is over. That would be my thoughts there. These situations arise where it kind of creates a situation where you have to take some chances, and there's no right or wrong answer from it, but you have to take chances. In this game where we talked about Herbert taking over for Tyrod Taylor over there, he playing the defending champs at home in a Brandon Stadium. The game, they played them tough. They were able to limit Patrick Mahomes, defending Super Bowl champs, to 6 points in the first half. That was the lowest scoring output from Patrick Mahomes in his Chiefs career. They were limiting them to 2 touchdowns and 2 field goals. It took 2 58-yard field goals for them to actually pull that game out. However, there was a time it was the Chargers had the ball, 4th and 3 on their own 33 in overtime. I don't know if you were watching that game, but Romo says, no, you got to go for it. You can't punt it here. You got to go for it. And on their own 33, I'm like, no, Romo, you don't punt. You don't go for it on your own 33. You miss it. They don't have to gain any yards because they're already in field goal range if they don't pick it up. I'm not a pessimist. I'm not the one to think negatively. However, you got to think realistically. Chances of you getting it with a young rookie leading your offense is not great. They don't have Walter Payton, Eric Dickerson, Emmitt Smith, where they can run the ball for 3 yards. So it's probably going to have to be some kind of run-pass option play. It's good where they run the quarterback out, and, you know, it's a rookie quarterback back there. No telling what he's going to do. He already made a extreme rookie mistake earlier in the game by throwing an interception that, you know, had they kicked the field goal on that drive. The game probably would not have went into overtime, but and they gave the Chiefs a chance to come down and score, kind of tie the game up, but bring them a touchdown closer. So, what is your thoughts on going for it from your own 33 in overtime against the defending champs and Patrick Mahomes? Do you give Patrick Mahomes the punt, which they did punt? And then Patrick Mahomes did come down, and, again, they needed a 58-yard field goal to win the game. So it wasn't like Patrick Mahomes drove them right down and they scored a touchdown to win the game. They still needed a long field goal to win the game. And so that tells you the defense played, you know, was playing decent. What's your thoughts on that situation?
Conventional wisdom says you punt the ball. It's hard to have conventional wisdom when you're playing against Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and you know that all the possessions are very valuable, and you know that every missed opportunity can ultimately cost you. So I feel that the Kansas City Chiefs are one of those teams that you can't really fault yourself for being extremely aggressive and putting that kind of pressure on your defense all the time. At some point, you have to kind of turn the tables, so to speak, and kind of go for broke. I know that the Los Angeles Chargers don't really have the offense to kind of warrant that kind of decision, but at the same time, I can't fault him for, you know, at least thinking about, you know, doing that.
Okay, you alluded the question, man. Do you go for it or do you punt the ball in that situation?
If it was me, I probably would have gone for it.
You would have gone for it. Fourth and three on your own 33, you go for it.
Yes, because if you get to 3 yards, you keep the ball, you keep momentum, and you have a better opportunity to score. I mean, you're just kind of you're putting everything on your defense otherwise. I would have went for it.
Mm. I would have punted it. My defense is better than my offense. Again, I'm not a negative thinker, but, I mean, realistically, fourth and three from the 33, this isn't a chance to gain 3 yards to win the game. This is a chance to gain 3 yards to get another four down to move down the field goal, to move down and kick a field goal. Had it been a gain 3 yards to win the game, maybe, I'm a little bit more inclined to go for it in that situation. But, no, just in overtime, my defense has played solid. It was at that point, it's a 2020 game. We've kind of held the defending champs to 200 yards passing. You know, you always think offense like that, sooner or later they're going to break out. I get it. But our defense has played fairly decent football. So I'm going to punt it and I'm going to give my defense a chance. It turns out, like I said, they did end up punting the ball. The defense did hold them to keep them to a field goal. It took a 58-yard field goal for them to win the game. So, you know, hey, on that type of play, you said, you got to tip your cap and say you guys beat us on that play. So I would have punted and just kind of play you solid defense. What's your thoughts on the NFL coaches being fined for not wearing their mask properly? That's a fair foul.
I appreciate the NFL paying attention to detail and not letting the coaches, just because of, you know, who they are and, you know, their communicating style, just do whatever it is that they want. There are rules and protocols in place for a reason, and it's all fun and games until, you know, your team breaks out with, an outbreak, so to speak. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're focusing and paying attention and holding those guys accountable.
This is how putrid the Dolphins have been since 2017. This was their first 10-point-plus win since 2017. That's how putrid things have been for them.
Oh, just, wow, good for them. Good for them to get that done against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
What do you think about Gruden's response? Hey, look, man, we've all been tested for COVID. We get tested every day. I don't have it. I'm trying to talk to them. I'm trying to communicate to my players, man. We're trying to call plays in the game. We're trying to get things done out here. And to be fined for that, you know, I appreciate what's going on, but to be fined for that is kind of absurd.
Well, I understand that the situation and the environment as it was makes things a little bit more difficult for you to communicate, but that is far and beyond not really the point of the matter. If we're trying to be consistent and keep things to a minimum, why is it that you think that you don't have to wear a mask outdoors and you're not in a bubble type of environment? It just doesn't make any sense. Why can't you just put a mask on like everybody else?
He's trying to call plays. He's trying to communicate to his team players, and they've been tested. Everybody he's talking to has been tested.
Okay, well, there are other coaches that seem to be able to do this just fine. Or they were a visor, Andy Reid style, and they just get it done, man. So sorry that there's a pandemic going around, you know, the world, and that you think that because you need to call plays a little better that it doesn't pertain to you. That's just ridiculous.
Okay, all right. What do you think about Well, let's look at our confidence picks, man. This is a tough week here. And our confidence picks, we both registered 15 out of 15. You had KC winning, Pittsburgh winning, Tennessee, Baltimore, and San Francisco winning. I had KC winning, Tennessee, the Rams, Dallas, the Cowboys, and Buffalo. So both 15 out of 15. You got a slight lead. Actually, don't have a lead in this category, but I have a slight lead in this category. Our picks for the week. We both went 13 out of 16 last week. The games, you had Cincinnati over Cleveland. We both had Minnesota winning. I had Washington over Arizona. You had Arizona over Washington, and Kyler Murray went out there and ran all over them cats. What happened to your young defense, man? The defense that was supposed to be so studly. Did you hear Chase Young's name called at all this past weekend?
You know, Kyler Murray is a tough one to track down, so I'm not going to be too hard on Chase Young. And I don't know if he had a chance to see too much of the game, but they were definitely running away from that dude, away from his direction altogether. They were not allowing him to be a factor in the game whatsoever. I mean, it's a growing pain. It's a learning experience. It's a teachable moment. I think Chase Young is still, at the end of the day, going to be your NFL Rookie Defensive Player of the Year.
Okay, dude. Wow, NFL Defensive Rookie Player of the Year in week two. Okay, we'll keep our eye on that. And then the aforementioned Drew Brees, kind of, you know, was that better Raiders or that bad Drew Brees and the Saints? What do you think that was?
Bad Drew Brees and the Saints, and they looked very ordinary without Michael Thomas. We see why they gave him his money when he asked for it to begin with. But they're a completely different team without him. He's clearly their best player, hands down.
Do you – so are you think my Super Bowl pick is in jeopardy then, the Saints going to the Super Bowl?
Your Super Bowl pick is not in jeopardy, Cam. It's completely trashed and washed, unfortunately. Of course, anything can happen once you get to the playoffs. Anything can happen, and, you know, injuries is a very big part of the game. So, you know, let me not be too crass in week two with regards to what your pick is, but doesn't look good so far.
Wow, that's pretty cold, man. That's pretty low. We had also the same amount of confidence picks. I had Minnesota plus three, the Rams minus one, and Seattle minus four. And you had Minnesota plus three, Cincinnati plus six, who just barely won. That was a good call because that was a 7-point game with the Browns. And you had Buffalo minus five. And so, again, we tied up in that category. So with all that we've done to prevent the tie for the week, we end up tying in the confidence pick, points against the spread, and the picks overall. So
wow.
We'll work out a research looking at my
okay.
homework. Good job by you, sir. Moving on to next week, do you have the picks in front of you for next week, the confidence picks?
My confidence picks. I do not have the confidence picks right in front of me, Cam.
Okay, I'll read them off to you. Confidence picks, I have the Colts, Jacksonville, Arizona, Pittsburgh, and the Chargers, actually. You have the Chargers, Arizona, Indianapolis, San Francisco, and Tampa Bay. And we'll talk about who they're playing here this week. The Jaguars are playing the Dolphins, so I just lost 2 points. You can have the Jaguars out there, actually. The Colts. The Colts will be let me see who the – we have the Dolphins playing the Jaguars, Bears playing the Falcons, Rams and the Bills. So I got the Rams winning. You didn't pick the Rams either, huh? The football team playing the Browns. Nobody picked the football team playing the Browns.
Didn't pick the football team, didn't pick the Rams over the Bills. I mean, I did pick the Colts over the Jets. I thought that was pretty smart on my part. I did pick the 49ers to win their game against the Giants. I thought that was pretty smart. And then, you know, I did pick Tampa Bay as well. So I thought I did pretty well with my picks.
Oh, you thought, well, I mean, time will tell, man.
I mean, Tampa Bay playing against a team that doesn't have a starting quarterback, really. So, I mean, I thought that was just smart on my part. I don't see them on your board at all. Were you aware that the Broncos didn't have a starting quarterback? Or?
I mean, yeah, they're not on my board at all. I don't go for the softies, man. I don't go for the
Oh, okay. You try to make it as hard on yourself as is seemingly possible. You're trying
to challenge yourself
when it comes to confidence picks.
I don't go for the low hanging fruit, you know. But yeah, that was a good choice out of you. Yeah, good choice out of you by taking Tampa Bay, and let's see what they do. And you just made me root for the Broncos this weekend because I don't go for the low hanging fruit. But that was a good pick
out of
you. Okay. Well,
thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I got the Chargers minus CJ McCaffrey with 5 points confidence in them.
That's quite a bit of confidence considering that they'll be starting a rookie quarterback, but okay.
I have the Steelers over the Texans for 4 points.
Good.
I have Arizona.
Good.
I have Arizona over, who are they playing? Over the Lions for 3 points. I have Jacksonville. I just lost 2 points. And I had the Colts over the Jets. For the 1 point, so already I'm two points in the hole there. So I see you did take the Chargers, you took Indianapolis, you took the Cardinals, you got San Fran, and you're looking for your little your gimme in the Broncos playing Tampa Bay. Good.
Yes,
talk to you.
Yes, that is the highest on my confidence level. Yes.
Yeah, the gimme. And you got the Niners over the Giants. So good observation from you by taking the gimme. I don't
just
see that in
the schedule, Cam, yeah.
In your points against the spread, I don't see where is Tampa Bay and Denver? They're not in your points against the spread? Hmm.
No, Cam, if you look at my points against the spread, I was taking the points in all the games. I didn't have to give any points. Did you notice that?
No. Oh. Okay. You're taking your point. Big deal.
That's how that works. Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
We'll
that's why they call. That's why they call me Young Sam Rothstein, Cam. That's what. That's exactly what. I'm not giving you any points. I'm getting points. You see how that works.
What, Young Sam? You're not that far. You have one pick ahead of me for the season yet, Sam. Just so you.
Okay. Well. Just so we're clear, I am in the lead. Thanks. I'm reiterating that point.
By 1 point, and we'll see how this week plays because it won't be. It's not an insurmountable lead. Just to let you know, fans. Once again, let the people know where they can find you, Young Sam.
They can find me at Cleavy Wonder on Twitter and Cleavon Steele on Instagram.
And I am Voice of Fans on Instagram and What's Good in Sport on Twitter. You can find me Cam and. Let us know what you think of our picks. So we should actually post these picks on a weekly basis to let the fans chime in to see. Or are you against posting your picks to let the public know what you got?
I am very much for that, Cam, and the backlash that comes from it when you have to answer for the picks that you've made.
Okay, that's an added thing we're gonna have to do for our podcast, man. But let's take a break here. We're gonna come back and talk about. The NBA stories, we're going to talk about the Nuggets just had a 4-point heartbreak loss. I think it was 5-point heartbreak loss in game four of the competition with the overrated Lakers. Let's talk about this here shortly. Let's take a break right now. Fans, welcome back to Voice of the Fans podcast. We're going to talk about some NBA topics here. The Nuggets, we want to talk about Joker and the Nuggets. I really said going into game four here, they should have been up 2-1 However, they were down 2-1 to the overrated Lakers. And the Lakers actually just squeaked by winning a 5-point game. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hit a big three with about 4.5 minutes to go in the game that didn't seal the victory, but it was a major three that kind of stopped the momentum from the Nuggets. And they ended up winning this 5-point game. So kudos to the Lakers that go up 3-1 against the Nuggets. But we all know this is where the Nuggets like to be. They came back twice already in this playoff series. They beating the Utah Jazz and then the Los Angeles Clippers. And now they have the chance to finish off the Los Angeles Lakers on their way to NBA Finals. What's your thought on this victory for the Lakers, and how frightened are you of the Denver Nuggets?
Well, Cam, we all knew it was going to be a tough fought series, given the way that the Denver Nuggets were able to overcome adversity and beat the prohibitive favorite to win the 2020 NBA championship in the Los Angeles Clippers with the reigning NBA Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard on their team, and three 6 Men of the Year award winners with such depth and such confidence going in. So the way that they were able to overcome that 1-3 deficit to win that series, we all knew it was going to be a very tough, road ahead. Fortunately, the Lakers have been able to kind of, rely on their poise and their experience. And again, their point guard has gotten a little bit healthier. Of course, he's always a game time decision. We don't quite know exactly, where he's at, but thank goodness that the Lakers have been able to have him for the 4 games that they have. And he's made a huge difference. And also in this series, because they're not playing the small ball Houston style, another NBA MVP in Dwight Howard has been able to be more, effective and contributing as well. So, they're just fortunate that they've been able to play their game and, hopefully they're able to sustain that. But, no one ever said it was going to be easy beating a team the caliber of the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, and speaking of the Nuggets, man, Jamal Murray pulled off another miraculous play. We saw a few series ago he hit the 360 lay-in over Rudy Gobert. Tonight he hits the up and under, switching the hands, jumping up on the left side, jumping up on the right side, finishing it on the left side as he inverts the LeBron James block attempt. Which of those plays do you think was the most impressive?
Oh, with Jamal Murray, it's just complete entire body of work. It's hard to kind of, single out one particular play. They all have been so fantastic and, contributing to the Nuggets' success. So I don't want to, give one play, any more credit than another, Cam. It's just Jamal Murray doing his thing out here.
Oh my goodness gracious. You know what? Fans, pull up your socks, man, because this guy's talking about Lakers, man. He getting beat with BS. And let's talk about this other series. The Miami Heat lead the Boston Celtics. I think they're up 3-1, if I'm not mistaken.
You are not mistaken. They are up 3-1.
And the Jimmy Butler-led Miami Heat, I should state, last night – he inspired his guy, the rookie, to go off for 37 points, Tyler Hero. And they got a lead over the Celtics now, pretty commanding lead here. I'd like to ask you again, and this is probably the third week in a row I ask you, is Jimmy Butler a superstar yet?
Cam, for the third week in a row, I'm going to have to unfortunately disappoint you and say no. Jimmy Butler is not a superstar. However, his team is definitely overachieving and is doing some things in a historical fashion that perhaps have never been done. But no, Jimmy Butler is not a superstar.
Who do you think is inspiring the team to overachieve, as you put it? Who do you think is doing that?
Inspired the team?
Yeah.
Well, their president, Pat Riley, I'm not sure. Are you familiar with Pat Riley and his resume and his body of work?
I am familiar with Pat Riley, but he's done getting quality talent on the squad, And that quality talent includes a guy like Jimmy Butler. Having Jimmy Butler on the squad, Pat Riley is sitting a lot comfortable. I'm sure you saw him on the highlights, man, where he's just sitting nice and cool, calm and collected. He's even more comfortable with Jimmy Butler on that squad. Eric Spoelstra's job got immensely easier because he has a superstar, as in Jimmy Butler, to kind of lead the team.
Wow. You know, was that a Freudian slip that you kind of went? Oh, my goodness. I know you want to take that back so bad that you let that slip out. Yeah, he's a Patrick Beverly type, homie. He works really hard. He plays really good defense. He leaves it all out there on the court. But he's not a superstar. Oh, my goodness. Your conscience got the best of you. Fans, we may never, ever have a moment like this as long as we're doing the show. Oh, my God. You took the words right out of my mouth. He is a super Patrick Beverly.
Oh, my goodness. He lives.
God, how you let that happen. I'm sorry for you, Cam. It just completely just washes away anything you were trying to say, because that is exactly what you were trying to say. You're trying to make a super Patrick Beverly into a superstar in your mind, and you don't even believe it because Patrick Beverly came out of your mouth. Wow.
Freudian slip. Right there.
I am going to write this day down, September 20th. Wow. Saying one thing but meaning something totally different. Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just came out.
Jimmy Butler, again. Patrick, again. Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra are sleeping a lot comfortable because they have the guy Jimmy Butler on their team. And how he's inspired this squad, what he's done for this team, it's kind of made each and every guy accountable and made them more hungry. I actually was able to ask Gordon Dragic when they visited the Lakers or visited the Clippers earlier this season. I was actually asked to ask that same question. Fans, if you go on the Voice of the Fans YouTube, type in Gordon Dragic with Voice of the Fans, you'll hear his exact response to what Jimmy Butler means to the team and why they're playing so well with him on the squad. And now they have a 3-1 lead over the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals and will likely be the Eastern Conference Final champions, ready to face the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals this season. There was a list that came out of the best players under 25 years old. And I'd like to ask you, like, not to name the whole list, obviously, but who do you have listed as the best player under 25 years old in the NBA?
The best player under 25 years old in the NBA. Difficult question, but for right now, I think that we would have to be in agreement with saying Luka Doncic.
Oh, really? You act like
if I'm doing my math correctly, Giannis is older than 25, right?
I think Giannis is 26, maybe. So
okay. So he just missed the cut. Okay, so it's not Giannis. So yeah, I'm okay with saying Luka Doncic at this point, considering the way that he handled the Los Angeles Clippers with relative ease in his first real playoff, serious matchup. So, yeah.
Jason Tatum.
Great
Jason
player.
Tatum, Devin Booker. Donovan Mitchell, I don't think he's 25. I think he has to be older than 25. Would be my initial guess.
Maybe no.
Zion.
I mean, you're talking about guys in their fifth and sixth years, so.
Zion Williamson, Carl Anthony Towns, Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown. Bam Adebayo.
None of those guys are even in the same conversation, obviously. So I guess that makes it just that much easier to put him at the top if those were the other candidates.
Yeah, your guy Lonzo Ball has fallen off. Jamal Murray is 18. D'Angelo Russell, Trey Young, Ben Simmons. Yeah, the top five on this list is Trey Young, Ben Simmons, Zion Williamson, Jason Tatum, and Luka Doncic. Yeah, I think that's an easy determination there. I didn't even need to look at the list to come up with that one.
Sure, and Jamal Murray has clearly kicked the door in and stand right next to Luka. So, all the rest of those guys, you need to stand behind Luka and Jamal.
Would you say that Jamal is elevating himself that high with this playoff run?
Oh man, he's kicked the door completely in, man. It's not even funny anymore.
Okay.
I mean, you can't just keep playing, NBA Western Conference playoff basketball and just keep dominating people and just keep putting 30 and 40 and 50 up over and over and over again. And then it's not luck anymore,
Right.
It's not situation or circumstance anymore. It's like, no, I can do this against anybody at any time. So, yeah, the door is kicked wide open for Jamal Murray.
Okay. All right. I'm glad to hear you say that. Glad to hear you acknowledge that. And so he's got some work to do in this Western Conference Finals to further elevate his status. That's what I have for the NBA topics, man. Again, I want to thank the players just for keeping Breonna Taylor's name alive, bringing further awareness to the situation, and one day. And it's going to take continuous work, but maybe one day they'll actually acknowledge that Black Lives Matter in this country. Cleavon, let's take a little break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about this week in history. We're going to do the funnier foul. We got some random topics, and we're going to get into our fantasy football conversation. Take a little break here.
Hey fans, one thank you guys for tuning into our Voice of the Fans podcast as you do each and every week. We appreciate the love. Please make sure to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about our show. Additionally, I'd like to ask that you guys subscribe to our Voice of the Fans YouTube page. Go to YouTube, type in Voice of the Fans, hit the subscribe button. What you're going to find there is a lot of exclusive content, interviews between Greg Popovich and myself, Scott Farrell, sports talk host, and myself. You're going to hear my conversation with Emmitt Smith. Hear why he tells me to go do some research. You're also going to see my interview with Jim Brown, legendary Jim Brown. You're going to see my interviews with Eric Dickerson. You're going to see my interview with Terrell Davis. Hear why Terrell Davis says that Broncos running system was not a system. Hear his explanation of that. Once again, Voice of the Fans on YouTube page. Check it out. Again, tell a friend to tell a friend because we appreciate that love. Thank you guys for tuning in. And as always, thank you for making our voice your choice.
All right, fans. Thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, to Voice of the Fans podcast, this is your guy, Cam. Got Mr. Young Sam with me on the other end. Young Sam, this is, again, week 105, man. Let's do this week in history. September 22nd, 1915, Xavier University, first Black Catholic college in New Orleans, was started. I didn't know it was the first Black college in a Catholic college, actually, but Xavier University in New Orleans, first Black college to get started there. Let's stay down in the South. September 24, 1957, Little Rock, Arkansas. We saw the desegregation of Central High School. That's where you see the pictures of the girls going into school when they had to bring the SWAT team in, the what is I'm looking for? The military, not the military.
National Guard.
The National Guard to escort the black kids into school there. And just saw how 1957, man, your parents were alive, my parents were alive. And, you know, what's that, 63 years ago, this was it happened going on in America, that we were just allowed to go to schools, to the same schools. So when you look at it, man, it's not that long ago that we've endured the civil rights movement. A lot of people will say, you know, why are you protesting? You're making too much noise. But it, without making noise, without even protesting, man, we wouldn't have the civil rights movement. We just had the loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg that happened here last week. But without her standing up and fighting, you know, women wouldn't have been able to have credit cards. Women wouldn't have been able to vote still. You know, there's a reason that, you know, some people must stand up and kind of fight for not the underprivileged is not the word I'm looking for, but the people who don't get a lot of play or get a lot of have their voices heard. And so kudos to those people who do that. And it's unfortunate, like, again, 63 years ago, the country had to deal with the segregation, and we just saw it's on tape, Cleavon. It's on paper. It's been publicized. The hatred that one amount of group has gotten in this country. And to think that it's all better now is preposterous. 1975, a little closer to in our lives, actually, September 29th, WGPR-TV in Detroit was the first black-owned station in the U.S. began broadcasting, WGPR. I didn't know that. So I'd like to bring a little history to the show, to bring some stuff that will educate the masses, because that was something I was unaware of until I did some research, man. Were you aware that we had black on TV back in 1975?
I was not aware. That's a very important stat for us to know.
And then in 2001, September 23rd, your guy Barry Bonds had Homer 65 and 66 on his quest to tie Sammy Sosa with the home run record. So a little bit closer to date. Cleavon, what's your confidence in Deion Sanders having success at Jackson State as a head coach?
You know, Cam, I really like the blueprint that he is putting together with regards to how to be successful and kind of where to take HBCUs and how you can leverage your success and star power to do things. It's just, he's not the person to do it.
He's not serious about,
and I don't mean this in a negative way, but he's not serious about coaching. He's serious about being a personality. He would be a great recruiter. He's very much like Magic Johnson in that respect.
He's
an ambassador. He's a figurehead, but he's not the dude that's going to put in the 18 hours a day trying to figure out, you know, different schemes and looking over tape. He's the person that's going to go out and get you the number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 recruit in the country. And it's incredible if he's actually really truly has Terrell Owens as his wide receiver coach and Warren Sapp as his, you know, defense coordinator. I mean, that's immense star power, right? Again, I don't know if that's official. That's been the rumor that's been speculated. It's like, wow, right. How can you do any better than that, right? Hall of Famers is just all the way around. That sounds great. But their commitment to it is not, it's not serious.
So he's been wanting to coach for a while, man. He's been coach high school. He's taken his own time to coach high school football. He's been coaching, you know, for a while, just not at the college level. What makes you think he's not serious?
Because he's a millionaire and he's used to having his, kind of his time be his time, and when he wants to do things, he just goes and does them. And coaching is way more of a commitment than that. I just don't think he has a commitment to it. It's kind of like when Isaiah Thomas went and coached Florida International University for a while. It's like, oh, okay, that's cool. How long are you going to be the coach at Florida International? Like, until you get bored, right? And then you're going to go do something else because you have so much money, you don't really have to do this. That's not why you're, that's not really your motivation. And, you know, the kids, after a while, you'll get tired of that. Same with Deion Sanders.
Wow. So you're not liking the move, huh?
No, I love the move. I love the blueprint that he's put down, and it will work for other people who are not Deion Sanders.
Okay.
Just like a little bit blower, a little bit more commitment, and that blueprint can absolutely blow up. But Deion Sanders is more, he's a face. He's a figurehead. He's, you know, the Magic Johnson of football. You know, once Magic had to be the president and had to, like, really do things all the time, it's like, no, I just want to show up and say, hey, I'm Magic, and shake hands, and let's go have drinks and be cool. That's what Deion Sanders wants to do.
Okay, I get that point of it. I just thought Deion, I just thought he would have went, because he has been coaching a while. The rumors he's been wanting to be a coach for a while, that's been out there for years. I thought, why not go back to your alma mater? They're going to welcome you back, hell or high water, fail or no fail, they're going to welcome you back. And then he's not going to get any bad publicity for going to coach FSU. If it works, he'll get all the pub. If it doesn't work, it's going to be everything around him that didn't allow it to work. You follow what I'm saying? If you went back to FSU, nobody's going to say, Deion, you suck as a head coach. Nobody ever going to say that. Or you suck as a defensive cornerback coach. Nobody's ever going to say that. They're going to say the talent isn't there, the players aren't there, nobody's as good as him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to make every excuse in the book for him that he would not be the reason. So I think in saying that, I'm saying that would be a soft landing spot for him. And if they had success, if they actually had success, he would get some credit for that success. That would, if he went back as a position coach, that would elevate him to a head coach. And we all know, like, Bobby Bowden wasn't coaching those teams. He wasn't coaching the last 10 years. He was a figurehead, as you want to say, right? So we know that he could have success there at FSU had he took that route. That would have given him, even so, let's just say he stayed for 5 years, 2.5 years as a position coach, another 2.5 years as the figurehead head coach. That would have gave him some more cachet as a head coach, as a legitimate coach. That would have given him some cachet, some legitimacy as a head coach. And if he went to the NFL and failed, so be it, but that was a better route than going to the HBCU where, you know, he can be out of there in 2 years. You know, it can be all about him, and in 2 years he fizzles out, it didn't work. Now he's staying as a coach, right? That's where I see the issue being is Jackson State, okay, he's going to get some players. He's going to get out of how many players are on the field or on the team, 75 players on the team. He's going to get five-star players to sign at Jackson State. He's not going to get 25 five-star players to sign at Jackson State. He's going to get five, right? And that's not going to make them great. That's going to make them better than they have been. They're not going to be national championship contention. It's going to be pomp and circumstance. It's going to be some parties. There'll be some nice parties down there. There'll be a lot to celebrate down there for a couple of years. But after, to your point, after 2 years of being okay, being mediocre, he's going to want out. He's going to want something bigger and better, right? And because he elevates them to from a 3-7 record to a 6-7 record, a 7-3 record. Is that success going to lead him to a D1 head coaching job? Is that success going to lead him to an NFL coaching job? I don't think so. What's your thoughts on that?
I hear what you're saying. The Florida State job is huge, way over Deion Sanders' head. I don't think that he would have been welcomed back with open arms with consecutive losing seasons. No one is welcomed back to a university that, you know, had, you know, 30 straight years of, you know, losing records. I mean, that's just, that would be a lot to chew. That would be a lot to bite off. And I don't think that he would be given the same latitude that you think that he would. I think he would be given much more of an opportunity to succeed or fail on his own terms at Jackson State than he ever would at Florida State. And I think he has an opportunity, if those guys are committed for a year or two, to do some big things, but I just don't think it's sustainable because I don't think that their commitment is there. But again, yeah. I like the way he is laying out the blueprint for successors to come in and replicate that just with more intensity and more of a commitment to it.
We'll see how things transpire. You know, I'm rooting for him. I want them to be successful. I just don't think that they're gonna have. He's gonna have the success he's expecting. And I'm just saying, I don't think he's gonna get all the 5-star recruits that he thinks he's gonna get. Like, everybody's not gonna.
I think it'll be very similar. If we can make an analogy, I think it'll be very similar to what Penny Hardaway was able to do at Memphis. In kind of a really short period of time, you can recruit. Does that mean that you can, you know, coach and have X's and O's like on the same level as everyone else? It's hard to say.
But your
name recognition alone, in and of itself, will get you to get players. And what you do with it after that, I mean, they had the number one recruiting class in the country and didn't make the tournament. So
it just depends on what it is that
you're able to do. I mean,
okay.
Deion Sanders has no head coaching experience. And his passion and his heart is there for now, but I just don't think it's sustainable. I hope I'm wrong.
Okay. MJ buying into NASCAR and Bubba Wallace being his driver. What do you think of this? And will he have an effect on impact on NASCAR?
I think it's an interesting play. I think Michael Jordan is such a, you know, world figure that it would be hard to root against him, even in a sport that has historically been as racist as NASCAR. I think it's hard to turn your back on MJ, but at the same time, I mean, their fan base is such that, you know, it's not really very colorful, so to speak, and who knows how it ultimately will turn out, but if anybody can do it, it's someone that's as universally accepted and well-liked as Michael Jordan. So he has the best chance of anyone to get that done.
So here's Denny Hamlin is going to be part of the group as well. It'll be nice to see the number 23 Jumpman car driving around the track. However, I watched a documentary maybe a month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago, sometime in the quarantine, where they were talking about the only black NASCAR driver, who's actually, I forget the kid's name. Nonetheless, as good as a driver as he was, he was forced to, and this was in the, he finally made it to Indy 500 in the 80s, mid-80s. But he did a lot of driving from in the mid-70s to...
I think I would see ribs.
Huh?
Come on, Willie T. Ribs.
T. Ribs, was that what his name is?
Is that who you're referring to? I think that's who you're referring to in here.
Yeah, was it Ribs? I can't remember exactly. But he wanted, his goal was to be to drive in the Indy 500. And so along the way, he did some NASCAR. He drove in a NASCAR event. But he finally got to Indy 500 after about 10 years of, you know, fledgling around into mediocre tracks and what have you. I can't remember. It might have been Ribs.
Yeah, it's absolutely Ribs.
However, what I remember about the documentary, it wasn't him. a lot of money goes into the development of these cars, right? Obviously, Michael Jordan has money, so that's that part is taken care of. He didn't have financing that hindered his development. However, it was the guys inside the game understanding the tracks, similar to a caddy. The guys, the mechanics, the engineers working on the cars. It was those guys who didn't help him be as successful as he could. Like, they didn't care about the car. Like, we'll just give him the car we trained on, we let the young kids train on, and we're not going to tune up the car for them like we tune up the number one drivers, right? That's what I learned about that. So it wasn't, you know, every car, you know, they always pressing the limits on trying to circumvent the rules to make the car lighter, to make it drive faster, make the hub corners tighter. And those engineers are always pressing the limits to get that done. But those engineers working with ribs, they weren't doing that. They're just, here's a car right there. We gassed it up. Go ahead, do your thing. And he was winning with those cars, but if he had somebody focusing on making these cars better, how much better could he have been? And so it's still going to be – that told me, I was like, wow, okay. It's not only what you know, it's who you know, right? And then these guys have inside knowledge now. Will those inside guys with the inside knowledge be willing to help MJ and his team? Or are they going to be dead set against helping him, and then he gets somebody on his team who want to sabotage the group versus help the group? You follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And again, this is one of those things that MJ is kind of getting into where, you know, name recognition can only go so far, like you're saying, and, you know, even deep pockets to a certain extent can only go so far. You're getting yourself into something that you really don't have a whole lot of experience in, and your sphere of influence is not that great. So you'll be relying a lot on Denny Hamlin and, you know, Bo Wallace to kind of do things, because it's really, you're in, you know, uncharted territory with regards to that. And you just can't just walk in with the Jumpman suit or the Jumpman warm-up suit. Everybody just kind of falls over. It's not that type of crowd. So
those
are challenges you're going to have.
It's going to be interesting. It's certainly going to be worth following. But that's my immediate thought that comes to my mind. And as you mentioned, Denny Hamlin, Bubba Wallace, they have more intimate knowledge of the game, of the sport, than he does. So hopefully they'll be able to identify when they have a bad apple in the bunch and who's somebody who's not working for the betterment of the team. So we'll see how that transpires, and it's going to be worth watching. Something else that's worth watching is my fantasy football team. My fantasy football team is killing. We're ready to go. We had a tough loss, man. We had a fluke loss last week, guys, fans, a fluke loss last week. And you know, I hate to relive it, but what I do is I tell you moving forward what we got going on. Russell Wilson is my quarterback, so I'm very confident, as anybody should be, with Russell leading your squad. You know, we have some issues with the commissioner that, you know, we're going to have to get straight sooner or later. But moving forward, my squad is tough, man. They're tough to be beat. This league doesn't have Russell Wilson. I have Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, who put me, even though it's defense. Speaking of that, man,
I was just waiting for you to come back to reality on that. Like, wow, really? When did you go and get a league MVP to be your quarterback? I don't remember that. But
when does your guy, what's the coach's name who left Seattle, the defense coordinator? When does he lose his job?
When does Dan Quinn lose his job? Shortly. Shortly. It's pretty soon. Yeah. He's on borrowed time.
Come on, his time should be up, man. I mean, how do you let the onside kick? How do these guys let the onside kick roll 10 yards, man? Go fall on the damn ball in the damn game. They let it go 10 yards and try to die for it. I don't get that. But nonetheless, I got Matt Ryan. He puts up a lot of points. I do have DK Metcalf, who even
you
though
sure do. How's he doing for you?
even though
we you're actually banned. You're actually banned from talking about one of your players. It's unfortunate.
I'm banned for that. Hey, he's performing well. Keenan Allen, Ezekiel Elliott, Austin Eckler, Mark Andrews, Tre'Quan Smith. Well, I got a squad here. Chris Godwin, Devin Singletary, Matthew Stafford is on the bench ready to get in the game and do something. I got Austin Hooper, Antonio Gibson. You don't know about Antonio Gibson. I shouldn't even mention him to you. I got a squad here. As I mentioned, projected another 122 points this week. I'm playing some. Who am I playing? Lyce Cameron Jackson. He's a bum. Not worried about this guy one bit. Who am I up against this week? Lamar Jackson, Robert Woods, Juju Smith, Chris Carson, Melvin Gordon, George Kittle. George Kittle's injured. What is he even doing on the game? I'm not worried about these guys whatsoever. As I mentioned, this guy's 0-2. Last week I had a fluke loss, man. It was a fluke loss, squad. I think I had a 123.5. The other guy had 124.5. A fluke loss. We have to take one. We're not going to go undefeated. But how's your team doing over there, sir?
Actually, yours was a 5-point loss, Cam. It was 128.9 to 123.9. You know, my team is all right. You know, it's still kind of a work in progress. I'm a little bit disappointed with a few of my players. But overall, you know, I feel, you know, at 1-1, we're still doing just fine, just like yourself at 1-1. Although, you know, we talked that about, you know, Drew Brees. There's certainly some room for improvement. And there's certainly no reason he can't put up big fantasy numbers. Now, whether he can get his team to the playoffs, that's not really my concern. Adam Thielen did not have a very good game. I just can't foresee him being the number one receiver over there, not getting enough more touches. So, you know, we'll downplay that one. Terry McLaurin came through. I think he's kind of finally starting to. Terry McLaurin.
Okay.
The Washington football team number one receiver. And really the only receiver over there. So, therefore, you know, fantasy gold in and of itself. You know, Edward Solaire has regressed a little bit, but it's just been two games. I'm not willing to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater with him just yet. Josh Jacobs, you know, he's Josh. And he's doing what he can. And, you know, in that system, he's, you know, he's flourishing quite nicely. Gronk, huge disappointment. I may be ready to pull the plug on the Gronk experiment. But I got some people, you know, kind of hanging in the, you know, in the shadows waiting to take his place. Deontay Johnson. You know, he's proven to be every bit of Juju Schuster over there, so we're okay with him. And then, you know, J.K. Dobbins just ready to pounce whenever, you know, someone is underachieving or, you know, not quite, you know, having the most favorable matchup. So, you know, with regards to that, and I got Will Lutz, the kicker from the Saints, and, you know, the New England defense. So, you know, I feel pretty confident with my team going forward.
I told you, man, DK is on the block, man. If you're willing to give up Jarvis Landry and J.K. Dobbins, two of your bench players for another number one, an actual number one receiver on a quality football team, you know, that trade is available. If you want to make that happen, we can make that happen.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't negotiate in the press, Cam, so we'll
I mean, that's a good one. I think the fans would approve of that one. So if you don't want to take it, that's on you there, fella. That's on
you. I don't negotiate in the press, so.
Okay. All right. Well, it don't seem like you're negotiating a win. That's what that appears to me. So, well, fans, tune in next week. We're going to have more conversation on the fantasy football team. We're going to tell you about what's going on in NBA, NBA conference championships. The NBA finals may have started by then. I think it starts Sunday or Monday, if I believe.
Well, both series are 3-1, Cam, as you mentioned earlier, so there's a very good chance that by the next time we do this show, it will be the Lakers and the Miami Heat in the finals. Oops, I hope I wasn't jinxing anybody, but, I mean, that's just kind of the way it's looking right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we all know how Denver Nuggets responded 3-1. We already know how that is.
Patrick Beverley's dad versus, you know, LeBron. Maybe. We'll see.
So we're gonna leave you here with this quote, man, off-color quote from the late, great Kobe Bryant. everyone looks at your watch and it represents who you are, your values, and your personal style. Well, Kobe, nobody wears watches anymore, buddy. I hate to tell you that. So this is a little dated. This is probably a dated quote, but I want to leave that with you. Just I thought it was a cool quote from Mr. Kobe Bryant, who actually started a watch collection some years ago. So fans, we want to leave you with that one. Also, thank you guys for tuning in and to Voice of the Fans podcast. Thank you for being a part of the show. However you listen to the show, wherever you listen to the show, we appreciate it. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast, man. We do it for you guys. Thank you for your time and commitment to the show. Let us know what you think about the show. Just go on here and click subscribe, rate, and review it. Let us know. Give us your thoughts. It helps us with the algorithm once again. And fans, as always, each and every week, thank you for making our voice your choice.
Hey, Marcel Smalley right here. Thank you for making our voice your choice. You know what I'm saying? Let me give me a beat, dog. Let me get something.